You're on 3CR with Annie and Anila and Tobia on Solidarity Breakfast, and we're going to go to an excerpt from a briefing put together by the Information Rights Project. They were talking about the what they call the speech suppression laws, but which the federal government rushed through, calling it hate and extremist bill, combating anti-Semitism, hate and extremist bill 2026. Today we're going to hear a little bit from the lawyer Greg Barnes SC, who gives a bit of an understanding of some of the pitfalls in this hastily put together legislation that's going to affect all of us.
My name is Nevena, and I'm the General Manager of the Information Rights Project. Tonight's event focuses on Australia's speech suppression laws, how they operate, how they affect us, and what they mean for our country. We saw these laws justified in the name of national security and social cohesion, but they do raise serious questions about proportionality, transparency, and the long-term impact on freedom of expression. These laws and others like them are something the Information Rights Project stands strongly against. As soon as they were announced, we organised a petition against them, campaigning firmly on the side of freedom of expression and free speech. The bill that was put up was not only un-Australian, but it went against the very idea of justice and fairness that we as a nation hold dearly. Nearly 10,000 supporters like yourselves agreed and signed on to petition. In less than 48 hours, we also organised and wrote to the SNAP Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security, which was accepting submissions for only a very short window of time on the Combating Anti-Semitism, Hate and Extremism Bill 2026. The timetable given afforded Australians and organisations like ours only a number of days to consider and respond to a wide-ranging package that amended criminal, migration, customs and firearms legislation and looked to expand background checking regimes. So we reached out and invited you, our members, to provide written input and to guide our submission. We received more than 1,700 responses in less than 6 hours. Despite the variety amongst our respondents, the submissions displayed a really high degree of consistency with the concerns raised. Numerous submitters expressed alarm that the bill introduced vague and subjective offences, with liability turning on how speech might be perceived rather than if actual harm had occurred. You, our supporters, repeatedly warned us that this approach departed from established principles of law and posed serious risks to freedom of expression and due process. Ours was one of the many thousands of submissions received, but the bill was eventually rushed through our parliament. Shortly after, we set up a petition to repeal the speech suppression laws, and we appreciate and thank everyone who's already signed on to that. To help us delve deeper, we're really pleased to be joined by two people who bring deep experience and perspective on this issue. First, Greg Barnes SC, Information Rights Board member and one of Australia's most respected voices on civil liberties and human rights. With that, I'll hand over to Greg Barnes to share his legal expertise with us now.
Normally, lawyers like to be able to give their clients advice. And normally they like that advice to be as certain as possible within the realms that lawyers can do that, and understanding that, you know, police and others can exercise discretion in the way in which they deal with matters. This is legislation where you have to default to a position where you say, I don't know about slogans. I don't know about what constitutes hate speech. I wanted to look up, and this is a typical example, right? You'll see here the definition of religious official and spiritual leader. Now, there is no definition of religion. There is no definition of what it means to be a spiritual leader. And you might think it's self-evident, But we live in a pluralistic society where we have a range of religions, we have a range of other forms of spirituality. What does it include? What does it exclude? You know, who decides? But that's fairly typical of this legislation. If we can go now to page 9, this is the really alarming part. This is the part of the bill that deals with prohibited hate groups. You'll see there that the objects of the bill is to protect the Australian community or part of the community against social, economic, psychological and physical harm. Psychological harm. Psychological harm has a certain meaning if you're talking about personal injuries law or you're talking about victims of crime. We understand it. But what does psychological harm against a group in the community mean? It boggles the mind because it's just so difficult to know. One can understand social harm to some extent. Economic harm, if, for example, there are attacks on businesses, and physical harm, one can understand those. But what psychological harm means is anyone's guess. Now, the government can make a group, a prohibited hate group. It has to get advice from the Director General of ASIO. The Minister for the AFP, who's responsible for it, has to then, well, I think doesn't have to, but should speak to the Leader of the Opposition. And then it goes to the Governor General. But one of the key purposes of prohibited hate groups is that they have alleged to have committed hate crime. And hate crime includes current offences in the Commonwealth criminal law, which deal with threatening violence or incitement against groups or members of groups. A hate crime is also conduct that involves publicly inciting hatred of another person because of the race or national or ethnic origin of the target. Now, you'll notice here, there's no protection here for same-sex community, no protection here for on the basis of other forms of disadvantage, disabilities, etc. So it is purely focused here on race, national or ethnic origin. Bizarrely, a hate crime is not only where you commit a crime under a Commonwealth law. It says if you commit a crime under a state law, if you commit an offence against one of those state laws, that can also be a hate crime for the purposes of the Commonwealth. Yet those state laws are all different. So I might do something in Western Australia, which is lawful. But if I do something in New South Wales, it might be unlawful. So I could be committing a hate crime in New South Wales for the Commonwealth's purposes, but not a hate crime in Western Australia. Hate crime is not designed in a way that makes it easy for people to understand. A hate crime also is conduct which causes serious harm to people, causes serious damage to property, and the motivation is race or national or ethnic origin. Now, that's easier written than it is proved. You might have a person who has a variety of motives. They may not like the person who runs the local bottle shop. They may not like the group that meets at a particular church hall. But that might be personal. That could be a range of reasons. How do you show that that person has engaged in or threatened to engage in because of the person's race or national ethnic origin in those circumstances? Or the target of the property is associated with that person. Now, again, what does targeted property mean? And I'm not going to go into it in detail, but you can see the problem. Does that mean, for example, a synagogue, a mosque? Probably. Does it mean a store, you know, a shop owned by a Muslim person? So it's the imprecision that makes it so difficult to advise people. It says an organisation advocates engaging in conduct constituting a hate crime. This is very important for groups, protest groups. An organisation, by the way, can be part of a larger organisation, formal or informal, which mirrors what's in the terrorism laws. So it can be a group that regularly meets on a Saturday morning to protest against the genocide in Gaza, but it's an informal group. Or it can be a well-organised group that has a constitution, something like the Information Rights Project. Now, you'll see here that advocating hate crimes is if you counsel, promote, encourage, or urges engagement in conduct constituting a hate crime, or you praise the engagement of conduct constituting a hate crime, or conduct that would constitute a hate crime if engaged in Australia, where there's an unacceptable risk that such praise might have the effect of leading a person, regardless of the person's age or mental impairment, to engage in conduct constituting a hate crime. That last part is really difficult, because that means you could have a person with a mental impairment, having acted for many people with mental impairments, they do things for a whole variety of reasons. What does it mean to promote, encourage, or urge engagement in conduct constituting a hate crime? If I go to a rally and I say death to the IDF, is that to be taken literally? Obviously not. Some might mean that, but it's against an institution. It's not against an individual. Is that conduct constituting a hate crime? Other slogans are the same. The problem with slogans is this, that they mean many things to many people. And one of the problems with this legislation is that the reasonable person test, in other words, who is it that judges whether or not the particular conduct is offensive, etc.? Normally, it's just a reasonable person, the average Joe. A reasonable person would think that saying that all blacks should be killed is obviously racism, it's inciting, etc. Here, what happens is the reasonable person is the person with the characteristics. So, for example, order of the Netanyahu government, what I think is reasonable might not be what other people think is reasonable, what the community thinks is reasonable. I might be easily offended. So that's another problem, that the reasonable person is actually a reasonable person, but only with the characteristics of the person that is alleged to be upset. Now, the last thing I wanted to say on that, and I'm going to give you an example from South Africa. If anyone's from South Africa here, they'll know what I'm talking about. But this illustrates the problem with trying to legislate in relation to protests and what is said at protests. In South Africa, there is an apartheid song from the apartheid era that says, "Kill the Boer." Taken literally, it would mean kill white farmers and kill any white farmer you see. The higher courts in South Africa have recently ruled that it's got a contested meaning, and that in fact it means it's a protest song. It's not to be taken literally. But what we've done in Australia is that we have said, and we've got governments doing it at the moment, and it's frightening. We've got governments saying that we're banning From the River to the Sea. We're banning Globalize the Intifada. Now, that's essentially saying that these are attacks and inciting attacks, and that there will be attacks on Jewish Australians, which, you know, is palpable nonsense. It's palpable nonsense that these are slogans, again, with contested meaning. You know, what you're getting now as a consequence of the government's legislation and the fear that's been generated is incitement against people who are using those slogans. Look at the pylon of Grace Tang. You know, 25,000 people signing a petition saying she should be stripped of her Australian of the Year. You know, this sort of hatred being generated by the very sort of legislation that politicians are bringing in, they say, to improve social cohesion. Have a look up the top there. The AFP minister is not required to observe any procedural fairness for the purposes of the section. Now, it's a very short provision and it's extreme. It's undemocratic. It's a clear breach of the rule of law. Procedural fairness means that I am entitled to be heard. I'm entitled to be heard because my interests may be adversely affected. And that's why, you know, for example, if the government cancels your visa, generally speaking, they'll give you notice that they're going to cancel it. Under this legislation, you and your organisation could become a prohibited hate group simply on the say-so of ASIO, so you wouldn't know what they were telling the minister, or any other information that the minister seeks to use. You know, that could be after lobbying from particular groups, and you're not entitled to have a say. Sorry, you're now a prohibited hate group. Why? I don't. Well, I'm telling you, because you come within the legislation. Well, can we argue about that? No, I'm sorry. Now, of course, becoming a prohibited hate group has all sorts of consequences for people. The last thing I'd say about the legislation is this, that this legislation is built on the anti-terror legislation. And those of us who oppose the anti-terror legislation said it introduces concepts which ought to be unlawful. Once used here, will be used elsewhere. We've seen that. We saw that with anti-bikey legislation. We're seeing it now with this legislation. So what's next? We're going to use elements of this legislation to prohibit environmental groups. We're going to use it to prohibit organisations that are standing up for whistleblowers. Now, people say, oh, that's extreme. It's not extreme. That's where, you adopt these principles in one form of legislation. You think, that's a great idea. Let's just cut and paste and use it over here. That's what happens. So I'll just say this lastly. The states and territories, or particularly the states, not all of them, but most of them, are now moving to ban particular slogans. You can expect to see that there will be high court challenges. Now, it is likely, in the view of most lawyers, that some of this legislation will get knocked off, and some of the state legislation which bans slogans will get knocked off because it's disproportionate. But we do not have a right to freedom of speech in this country, and that's one reason why this organisation exists. You only have what's called an implied freedom to political communication. That's on a case-by-case basis. So you do not have that right to freedom of speech.